You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's episode is with Aaron Marsh of Copeland. I've heard about this band for years, and funnily enough, I hadn't really given them a real shot until their most recent album. That album is called Blushing, and it's a prime example of what happens when a band is able to make music for themselves in a truly uninhibited way. A few weeks back, I got to experience their live show at the Gramercy Theater, where they displayed the growth they've achieved throughout nearly a 20-year existence. And on that day, I got to chat with frontman Aaron Marsh, and during our chat, he shared the experiences that brought the album to life. Big ups to Aaron for opening up so much, and yeah, if you love this band, you're gonna love this talk, and if you don't know this band, I'm more than sure you're going to love this talk too. This is the 405 Exchange with Copeland. Enjoy. So this might be a bit of a frivolous question, but it's not one I don't think I've ever had the chance to ask a musician or a band, but can you tell me what it's like to release an album on Valentine's Day?
Oh, yeah. Well, Valentine's Day is like a little bit of it's a hot or cold holiday, right? If you're with someone, it's great. If you're with someone happily, it's great. And then it can be like depressing for other people. So that was something I didn't really think about when we made the decision. I thought we made like a really kind of romantic record. Then I thought it would be a cool, like memorable day to release it on. And I didn't think about the the fact that like probably a lot of people are like kind of unhappy on Valentine's Day. So yeah, I guess that was probably my main like trying to like promote the record as like a romantic record, but with the mindset that like maybe not everybody feels super happy on that day.
I think what's interesting with that, and especially with just the element of romance, like exploring that, I think it's really kind of understated how much nuance can be utilized within that word. I think that's like what the record kind of encapsulated on. So it's very fitting that you're able to release a record on that day, because romance isn't always happy. It's not just nebulous with the word happiness. Right. I feel like that was kind of what you were achieving with Blushing in a lot of ways.
Yeah, there's a lot of darkness, a lot of kind of dealing with, like, depression and yeah, definitely that flip side of romance where you're, you know, discontent or, wanting more.
Yeah, I fell for this album pretty hard, and I have songs I want to ask you about, but before I do, I want to ask you about the album as a whole. Can you tell me where the band was at the start of the recording process, creatively speaking?
Let's see, so we did a record in 2010. Wait, what year was that? 2014. We did a record and toured on it for 2 years. So we were, I guess, creatively, we're kind of in a place now versus, as opposed to when we were younger, we're in a place now where we can kind of do things on our terms. We kind of all have other things in life that we focus on also, like other businesses and other ventures. And really the process of making Copeland Records is just completely creative for us now. We don't feel like we don't have any pressure, like industry pressure to like make anything commercial or to even make it in any set amount of time. We just kind of do it as much as we like it, as much as we feel inspired, we do. That's how much we do, and we don't do anymore. And it's kind of really, it's really freeing. We don't have, you know, we don't have pressure to make a record at a certain time or make it sound a certain way. We just do it how we want it.
I hope this comes across as respectful, I'm about to say, but I feel like that definitely came across while I was listening to the record. And the respectful element is that while I was listening to it, I was like, wow, this is what it sounds like when a band isn't caring about selling. Like, that element of sell, that element, I mean, obviously, like, music could be a product and you want people to, as many people to hear about it, but I could just tell that wasn't at the forefront of your minds in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no, I take that as a compliment, because I associate making, like, selling records as being, you know, kind of like beating the hooks over the head, or just, or making things like taking the nuance out of records. Cause I feel like that's what, like, to make something like really concise and easily sellable, you kind of have to strip away like layers and not necessarily taking emotion out of it, but like, driving the hooks harder and, yeah, so anyway, I take it as a compliment. Thank you. Yeah, we definitely weren't thinking much about, like, the audience. We're just making something for ourselves.
Yeah, and the first song off the album is Pope, and it sets a great atmosphere. Honestly, this feels like one of those tracks I feel like a band always wishes that they could make someday. There's so much growth here, and I'm very keen to hear about how the song just came together as a whole, because would that be a fair thing to say, that this is a song you always wish Copeland could have made?
I don't know. I really like the song, and I like the way it came out. I don't know if I have like a benchmark, like this is the song that we've always wanted, because I think that would probably be like focusing on one song like as a goal would probably be getting back to that, just making something sellable. I think
almost
we just
like an albatross in some ways.
Yeah, I think we just like make it how we like it. That song started with the, I think the piano progression was the first, was like the jumping off point. That progression and the "this world is not real" lyric, the core, that kind of chorus hook. But I like the way it came out. I'm glad you like it. Glad it stands out. But it kind of came together, kind of like all the rest of them do. Maybe just had some magic sauce that caught your ear.
Yeah. Was this a song that was kind of birthed out of a jam with the band, or did you kind of bring it to them?
No. I think the whole song kind of came together in like demo form as like started from that progression and I kind of built it on my own, programmed drums to it, and then had John come in and play, and everyone kind of added their bits after.
Yeah.
Guitar stuff and electronic stuff.
What was a big treat about experiencing this album is that something I feel like a lot of artists do is limit their palette of inspirations. I feel like so many rock bands feel like they can only gather inspiration from other rock bands. A lot of hip-hop acts feel like they can only gather inspiration from other hip-hop acts. I feel like with this, it was very clear that the palette of inspiration was a lot more eclectic and diverse. I love that came through. And it was just clear to me that you were drawing inspiration from other genres and worlds of music. Would I be right in thinking that?
Absolutely. I actually avoid my own genre as much as possible.
Yeah.
I try to pull, and even pulling from other mediums, like trying to write based on a color scheme, or write based on a painting or a movie. You know, like pulling inspiration from even farther away from my genre, but even to other mediums. But yeah, I love hip hop, and I feel like I was shied away from incorporating those elements, like back, you know, kind of back in the day, like shied away from, because, you know, I didn't want to turn our band into like, you know, rap rock. I didn't want to like dance that, like, you know, kind of Linkin Park, Limp Bizkit line, because that's what everyone thinks when you think about blending rock and hip hop. You would think, you know, like the more active rock and that more like kind of in your face hip hop. And the hip hop I liked was the conscious hip hop and the boom bap and you know, kind of more like left of center stuff. And the rock I like is, you know, kind of more ambient and,
yeah.
Just like kind of a different take on that. But I mean, really not too dissimilar from those like genre mashups that people do.
Yeah.
But yeah,
that's very great.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you noticing that, because I definitely like the, I like pulling from other, and then classical music too. I like pulling from, I love or like arranging strings and that kind of thing, and kind of exploring different harmonic styles and kind of like using my music theory knowledge where this, I mean, I grew up in orchestra and taking music theory classes, went to performing arts high school. So I like kind of exercising that part of my brain too with it. So trying to, bring in, I love all styles of music. I try to find something in every piece of music that I hear that I can like grab onto. Sometimes it's, you know, sometimes I don't find it, but like, I think, I try to be as like appreciative of other styles as I can and knowledgeable.
It definitely comes across. And another song I wanted to ask you about, you know, the craft work of As Above, So Below is fucking mesmerizing.
Thank you.
Like, it really is. And I could tell that a lot of thought went into every second of the song. Like, it's one of those songs I listened to and I was like, wow, they definitely labored over the song during the recording and the mixing stage. Like, that's kind of the vibe I got with it.
That song had quite a few versions and we got stuck. We got stuck kind of not knowing what our direction was. And that was when we went up to, we did most of the record in Florida at my studio. There, we spent like 4 days. We went up to my friend's studio in, he lives in Chattanooga, and he just has this like, just like, it's like a museum of synthesizers. That's and amazing. He's just like a really, really talented guy. So that was one of the ones we were just like, we're kind of stuck on the song. We don't really know what way to take it. Can we just like, let's just light up a bunch of synthesizers and just like kind of, all bets are off on the song. Let's just like work on it and see where it goes. And we ended up kind of catching the vibe there for the song.
That's really awesome to hear. And I'm kind of curious, like, what do you think it was that made you eventually wrap your heads around the song? Because you mentioned that you were kind of lost within figuring out what it was. What do you think the turning point was?
I think we just had a new set of sounds there. And I think kind of having, like, just getting away from all, like, kind of muting a bunch of stuff that we had and finding a bunch of new things that inspired us. When we left there, we had way too much in the arrangement because we kept everything that we had originally and everything that we did there. There was, like, too many ideas. And at that point, it was just like, okay, what's our favorite things in this arrangement and do they work together? And so, yeah, at that point, it was just dialing it back until it sounded like a not such a clusterfuck. It sounded, it was catching that vibe. I think it just took a while to catch the vibe.
You know, I almost feel like what I'm about to say next is something you probably haven't heard on this run, I hope. But funnily enough, Blushing was my first Copeland record.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was the first
one. That really makes, I mean, I love that. Because we actually feel like a lot of times that we have trouble finding new listeners. Just being, you know, we don't get a lot of press because we're just like, you know, we're maybe in the twilight of our career. We had like this early MySpace boost, you know, like the MySpace, like poppy emo thing. And that we kind of find ourselves like having trouble, you know, kind of detaching from that kind of era. A little bit, so it makes me happy to know that newer listener.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was gonna say, like, the context probably came across your band is like, because that was a big part of my life. Like, when MySpace was a thing, that's pretty much when I was in high school,
right?
And I definitely saw your band name around, but it was one of those things where it was like, I'm being bombarded with so many acts. That's kind of like the weird thing about that time.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
and then so much.
Yeah, and a friend of mine is Ray Cassidy. I used to work with her, which was insane.
She's the best.
Me. Yeah, so she would always tell me about you guys, and I checked you guys out. And, like, you know, I think that's really cool because you brought up the element just now, Twilight Years. But I think what's cool about experiencing an album like Blushing, it's always my favorite thing where a band puts out a new record, I get to experience it, and there's this, like, wealth of a discography you could jump into and just see the progression. I mean,
that's cool.
Yeah.
I like that too. Yeah. Well, thanks. Yeah. How do you know Ray?
She used to be in a band called San Fermin, and they're a band that I still work with, and I used to work with back then. And
okay, cool.
We just always stayed in touch, and she's a very one-of-a-kind person.
Yeah, for sure. she's like Mary Poppins. Like, this. She's just, like, very eccentric, very cool. Just, like, there's never a dull moment when she's around.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, she's definitely one of my favorite people.
I mean, you touched on it, but, like, my big thing with bringing all that up is that I do imagine that just in pure logistics of being in a band while you're making an album like this, or any album, really, you do find yourself thinking that for some people it'll be the first time they even come aware of your band. Was that something you were thinking about when making it?
Or no, because it's hard for us to find new listeners, honestly. So yeah, I don't think about people diving in. No, on LP6, you know, like, it's just not common for us.
You know, it's funny about you saying that, because it's going to be mentioned in the intro, I don't even want to bring it up, but we're at the Gramercy right now in New York, and you're about to play a show, and before your tour manager let me in here, I saw a bit of the queue outside. There were a lot of younger people out there, like teenagers, at least from what I noticed, like, at the glance of the line.
Yeah, I guess, so I feel like a lot of people, a lot of fans have learned about us from their older siblings.
Yeah.
That's what I hear a lot. Like, yeah, my brother used to, you know, listen to you guys, and, yeah. You know, I've been listening to you since I was 8 or something, you know, so...
That's mind-blowing.
So, the older sibling route to finding new music is a thing. I mean, I think about bands that I heard from my older brother.
Yeah. Was that a bit of an entryway for music of you in a general sense? Like, your older brother hogging music?
I think I just by default, just because, you know, that's what you do with your older brothers. Like, I just liked whatever he didn't like. You know what I mean? I was but then there were certain things that he liked that a few years later I'm like, yeah, this is good. Like, okay. I remember him talking about the band Hum, and he probably doesn't even remember Hum at this point in his life. But I remember hearing about them from him, and then years later, you know, someone else mentioned Hum, and I listened to it and fell in love with the band, and like became a way bigger Hum fan than he ever was, for sure. But I think about all these bands that he would, you know, he was a few years ahead of me, so he was going to shows that I couldn't go to.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing about bands from him, like, man, it really would have been cool to see some of these shows that he got to see before. Yeah. I was of age.
I definitely can relate to that. When I was a teenager, I would definitely say, even from my first year of college, if it was a band or an artist that I thought my parents would hate, it immediately made me want to like them.
Yeah. What a little shit you were.
Yeah, I was a pure little shit. I'm glad you called me out on it, because I tell my friends all the time, I was a fucking little shit as a kid. Another song I wanted to ask you about was Skywriter. It's right in the middle of the album, and it features a collaboration with Young Summer.
Yeah.
The feeling that this song evokes is kind of like being in water. And I feel, honestly, that's kind of prevalent throughout the entire album, where kind of has this essence that you feel like, I don't want to say submerged, but it's almost kind of like that halfway point where your ear is kind of like half in the air and half in the water. That's almost like the vibe I get when I was listening to a lot of the songs.
Sure, yeah. So we used a lot of, like, you know, a lot of synthesizers and little, you know, kind of little chimey things, and I think just by default we just immediately darken sounds.
Yeah.
Kind of reduce the high end. This is like our go-to, and I think that kind of makes that, gives it that like slightly like underwater feel. Things like kind of reverberating, but kind of in a dark, kind of muted tone.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, one of my reasons for bringing up the song was, I mean, it's a beautiful song, but I'm curious about how the collaboration came about, because I mean there definitely are bands who collaborate with other artists. I mean, it's been happening forever, but I do think it's a special thing when it works, because I do imagine when you're an artist and you get to go to a studio, there's still that question of, like, is this actually going to work?
Yeah. So obviously Ray, you know Ray, she was on our fourth album.
Yeah.
But we've had a different, I mean, since our third album, we've had a different female voice on every record. And so I think now, whenever we start working on the record,
yeah,
my mind is already turning about, like, who is it going to be for this one? Steph Keppen was on our fifth record. She's from Arizona. Steph and the Articles is the name of her band. And, I guess I was just like, yeah, just following the vibe, trying to figure out, you know, who that would be, and try to find people with, you know, different voices, so it doesn't sound, I wanted to feel like a different person from the last record. So, and her voice is, she has this like real deep, smoky voice. We never had anything like that. I mean, her voice is, I mean, kind of deeper than mine. Deeper than the range that I sing a lot. I can sing lower than her, for sure. But her voice has this, like, kind of deep, smoky tone. And I just love her songs. Like, been a fan for a while. I think I started listening to her when we were making the previous record.
Yeah.
But yeah, just love her stuff, and fortunately she wanted to do the song.
That's great, man. I only have a couple more questions for you. Thanks for taking the time to chat.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, this is fun.
Yeah, you know, something special that you got to do last year was play with the Imperial Symphony. I remember seeing people posting about that, like friends of mine who are like from here and other friends from Florida who went to go see it.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. I'm sure you're always asked what the experience was like, but what I'm more curious about, and I was actually thinking about this on the way here, is I would love for you to talk about what it was like after. Like, what was the following day like, having to experience all of that?
Okay, so I was definitely the most stressed out I've ever been for any show. It's because I've spent 3 months... I'll have to tell about the lead up to describe So I spent 3 months pretty much full time just writing arrangements, like 50-piece orchestra for, you know... I think originally they wanted us to do an hour and a half long show. I think I ended up writing arrangements for 12 songs. And they were like all pretty full, you know, like percussion, the symphonic percussion, keys, harp, you know, multiple string parts, all the woodwinds, I mean, the works. And I think I kind of put so much pressure on myself that when we got to that day, I was like a nervous wreck. Yeah. So like the next day, the day after, I had no idea what to do with myself. Like I had all this pressure, and then an hour and a half goes by, the show's done, and I'm like, what do I even do? It was like very strange feeling to like have a ton of pressure and then suddenly it's done.
I hope you went for a walk or something.
Yeah. No, I was trying to do all the self-care things on the like that week leading up to it, because I was very, very stressed. But so originally we thought we would be able to recreate that show in other towns.
Yeah.
Like do Nashville, do LA, do Dallas, do New York. But I think the process of it, and then just the amount of variables and things that could go wrong with that size of a group, and then like as expensive as obviously an expensive show to do, and the symphony hall was not equipped to handle a band like a rock band. It was just like not. There was the tech end was just not there.
Did you find yourself realizing that the day of, or a little bit towards the lead?
The day before, when we did the rehearsal, it's like, yeah, we basically had to turn everything as low as possible, because the room was very, you know, the room itself is kind of like a resonator, you know, it's like, so the acoustic instruments don't have to be mic'd to be heard all the way in the back row. So even with the smallest guitar amps and like, you know, the drums being played as quietly as possible, which just kind of neutered our like rock vibe. I mean, we made it through, and it ended up being really nice, a really nice sounding show in the room.
Yeah.
But we recorded the show. It didn't turn out great. Like the recording, like on a quality level, wasn't good enough, and performance level wasn't good enough. It was like there's just too many moving parts, too many like variables, so we're not gonna be able to do the show anywhere else, and the recording didn't turn out great, so it felt like kind of a waste of 3 months, but the flip side of that was what it did was it connected our younger creative community to the orchestra, and you know, got collaboration. I'm a big proponent of like our local scene. I'm always trying to like kind of trying to lift up and raise awareness for like our local artists, and I think that went a long way, because it kind of connected like the old guard with the younger people. So so in that way it was like 100% worth it, and it's just like a good press thing. It just looked cool.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have any like lasting assets other than the arrangements that I did. Still have the arrangements, so we could theoretically at some point like record an orchestra on, you know, on one of those older songs.
But also like just on a personal level for you, I mean, it has to be some type of internal affirmation just knowing you could do something like that. I mean, to that element of stress, obviously it's not it's not a really pleasant thing to go through.
Right.
Knowing that you could go over that hurdle and actually produce something of quality, that's really interesting.
Yeah. And so, and also the conductor of the symphony was my high school orchestra director. So I had music theory classes from him and a lot of, you know, I've kind of known him since I was a child, you know, and so having kind of his support, you kind of through his like full support behind my music and my arrangements was like really cool.
It's really full circle.
Yeah. It was.
So before I let you go here, in regards to Blushing, like going back to the album, I mean, now that you've been able to bring it to a live setting, a proper live setting with your guitars tuned up way higher than low.
Right.
What's that been like for you? Like, how do you feel like the album's been able to be reframed in a contextual way from being able to play it live now?
I always feel like I kind of wear in new trails vocally, so I kind of, you know, as we, you know, playing the songs, like, you know, we've got 45 shows on this tour or something, so doing, like, playing the song that many times over a period of 2 months, you kind of find new paths for the vocals to go, but that's just kind of natural. It happens with all the songs. I mean, it's fun. There's a lot more electronic elements that we've been able to bring to the live show, and I think having Blushing have so many of those kind of surreal electronic elements has like kind of pushed us to incorporate it even more so live. Yeah. So yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of crazy because like being aware of just your history and like how you brought up, you know, the MySpace era. I mean, touring's really been your life.
Yeah, we were a heavily touring band. When our first record came out in 2003, we played over 600 shows in 2 years. So literally, we did not go home. We left, our record came out, we left, and we didn't come home for 2 years. So it was just like show. And then as we got more, you know, a little farther along, we started dialing it back. And so now we really only tour like every couple years now, like every once a year or maybe every other year.
Oh.
But it's kind of works out with our families and stuff like that.
You still enjoy it, I imagine, right?
Still enjoy it. Yeah. Still, I enjoy some parts of it. I enjoy performing. I enjoy eating good food from around the country, around the world. But yeah, I also like being home too. I got a couple kids, so we built a studio in my hometown, so I enjoy my work there. Yeah,
I can understand. That's something that's come up on this show like quite a bit about just how touring is great, but there is so much external and like other elements to them that people aren't really aware of. Of course, the show is amazing, but there is a lot of just outside stuff that just kind of gets in the way.
Yeah. You gotta appreciate when, if a band, you know, band member has like a family back home, make sure you like appreciate when they go out, because it's not easy. It's not easy to be out and be away from your family and, you know, kind of out there just trying, because this is like very much for a lot of artists. I mean, if you don't tour, you don't have a career, you know, so they're like giving up a lot to hopefully gain, you know, make a little headway in their career and get out there and do what they love. But yeah, there's definitely trade-offs for sure.
Yeah. Dude, thanks so much for the chat. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for coming.
It's an absolute pleasure meeting you today.
Yeah, likewise. Heaven knows what I, heaven knows what I